Thus have I heard on one occasion the Blessed One was living at Sawati in Jetta's Grove, Anathan Pindika's park. There he addressed the monks thus. "Monks, venerable sir," they replied. The Blessed One said this, "Hear, monks, a monk makes a declaration of final knowledge thus. I understand birth is destroyed, the holy life has been lived. What had to be done has been done. There is no more coming to any state of being." That monk's words should neither be approved or disapproved. Without approving or disapproving, a question should be put to thus. "Friend, there are four kinds of expression rightly proclaimed by the Blessed One who knows and sees, accomplished and fully awakened. What four? One speaks of the seen as it was seen. One speaks of the heard as it was heard. One speaks of the sensed as it was sensed. One speaks of the cognized as it was cognized. These, friends, are the four kinds of expression rightly proclaimed by the Blessed One who knows and sees, accomplished and fully awakened." How does the Venerable One know? How does he see regarding these four kinds of expression? So that through not craving and clinging, his mind is liberated from the taints. Monks, when a monk is one with taints destroyed, who has lived the holy life, done what had to be done, laid down the burden, reached the true goal, destroyed the fetters of being, and is completely liberated through final knowledge, this is the natural way for him to answer. "Friends, regarding the seen, I abide unattracted, unrepelled, independent, detached, free, dissociated, with the mind rid of barriers. Regarding the heard, I abide unattracted, unrepelled, independent, detached, free, dissociated with a mind rid of barriers. Regarding the sensed, I abide unattracted, unrepelled, independent, detached, free, dissociated with a mind rid of barriers. Regarding the cognized, I abide unattracted, unrepelled, independent, detached, free, dissociated with a mind rid of barriers. It is by knowing thus, seeing thus, regarding these four kinds of expression, that through not craving and clinging, my mind is liberated from the taints." Now, this little list of things is what you hear with Sutta number 111. As you might know, it's already, that is my favorite sutta. Okay, being unattracted, you not hold on to it because you like it. Unrepelled, you don't push it away because you don't like it. What we're really discussing here is true dispassion. Independent, free, dissociated, these are all talking about seeing them impersonally. Not taking any of these things personally at all. with a mind rid of barriers, there's no hindrances, there's no disturbances in his mind at that time. Saying good, one might delight and rejoice in that monk's words. Having done so, a further question may be put thus. Friend, there are these five aggregates affected by craving and clinging, rightly proclaimed by the Blessed One who knows and sees, accomplished and fully awakened. What five? They are the material form aggregate affected by craving and clinging. Now, the thing is, when one becomes an arahat, they are not affected by craving and clinging anymore. This is describing what was seen until they became an arahat. The feeling aggregate affected by craving and clinging, the perception aggregate affected by craving and clinging, the formation aggregate affected by craving and clinging, and the consciousness aggregate affected by craving and clinging. These, friend, are the five aggregates affected by craving and clinging, rightly proclaimed by the Blessed One who knows and sees, accomplished and fully awakened. How does the Venerable One know? How does he see regarding these five aggregates affected by craving and clinging? So that through not craving and clinging, his mind is liberated from the taints. Monks, when a monk is one with taints destroyed and is completely liberated through final knowledge, this is the natural way for him to answer. Friend, having known material form to be feeble, fading away and comfortless, with the destruction fading away and cessation, giving up, relinquishing of attraction, and craving and clinging regarding material form, of mental standpoints, adherences, underlying tendencies regarding material form, I have understood that my mind is liberated. Friends, having known feeling to be feeble, fading away and comfortless, with the destruction fading away, cessation giving up, and relinquishing of attraction, of craving and clinging regarding feeling, of mental standpoints. Now, this is talking about what you believe to be true as compared to what you actually see to be true. Okay? So you give up all your preconceived ideas. Now you're just talking as seen as it's seen. You're describing in that way. Okay, mental standpoints, adherences and underlying tendencies in regard to feeling. I have understood that my mind is liberated. Having known perception to be feeble, fading away and comfortless, with the destruction fading away, cessation, giving up, relinquishing of attraction, craving and clinging regarding perception of mental standpoints, adherences and underlying tendencies in regarding perception, I have understood my mind is liberated. Now, this is an interesting thing because perception is the start of all concepts, where your opinions and ideas are. We only talk in concepts. And with that, the arahat doesn't have any more concepts arising. His mind doesn't name things. He just sees perception as it actually is. So it's a real interesting thing to think on. Having known formations to be feeble, fading away and comfortless, with the destruction fading away, cessation, giving up, relinquishing of attraction, and craving and clinging, regarding formations of mental standpoints, adherences, and underlying tendencies, in regarding formations, I have understood that my mind is liberated. Having known consciousness to be feeble, fading away and comfortless, with the destruction fading away, cessation, giving up, relinquishing of attraction, craving and clinging, regarding consciousness of mental standpoints, adherences, and underlying tendencies regarding consciousness, I have understood that my mind is liberated. It is by knowing thus, seeing thus, regarding these five aggregates affected by craving and clinging, that through not craving and clinging, my mind is liberated from the taints. Saying good, one might delight and rejoice in that monk's words. Having done so, a further question may be put thus. Friend, there are these six elements rightly proclaimed by the Blessed One. Excuse me. Who knows and sees, accomplished and fully awakened. What six? They are the earth element, the water element, the fire element, the air element, the space element, and the consciousness element. These, friends, are the six elements rightly proclaimed by the Blessed One who knows and sees, accomplished and fully awakened. How does the Venerable One know? How does he see regarding these six elements? So that through not craving and clinging, his mind is liberated from the taints. Monks, when a monk is one with taints destroyed and is completely liberated through final knowledge, this is the natural way for him to answer. Friends, I have treated the earth element as not self, with no self based on the earth element, and with the destruction fading away, cessation, giving up, relinquishing of attraction, of craving and clinging, based on the earth element, of mental standpoints, adherences, and underlying tendencies based on the earth element, I have understood that my mind is liberated. Now, the earth element is what is hard or soft in your body. This is from Sutta number 62, where the Buddha is talking to his son Rahula. He says, Rahula, whatever internally belonging to oneself is solid, solidified, and clung to, that is head hairs, body hairs, nails, teeth, skin, flesh, sinew, bones, bone marrow, kidneys, heart, liver, diaphragm, spleen, lungs, large intestines, small intestines, contents of the stomach, feces, or whatever else internally belonging to oneself is solid, solidified, and clung to. This is called the internal earth element. And that should be seen as it actually is with proper wisdom thus. This is not mine. This I am not. This is not myself. When one sees it thus as it actually is with proper wisdom, one becomes disenchanted with the earth element and makes the mind dispassionate towards the earth element. Rahula, develop meditation that is like the earth. For when you develop meditation that is like the earth, agreeable and disagreeable contacts will not invade your mind and remain. Just as people throw clean things and dirty things, excrement, urine, spittle, pus, and blood on the earth, and the earth is not repelled, humiliated, and disgusted because of that, so too, Rahula, develop meditation that is like the earth. For when you develop meditation that is like the earth, arisen agreeable and disagreeable contacts will not invade your mind and remain. So what are we talking about here? If you take any part of your body, and that's what four of the elements are about, personally, you are going to cause yourself a lot of suffering. If you see it as it actually is, and you take these different elements as they actually are, you'll lose attachment to your body. And that's a good thing. When you stop taking it personally, you stop worrying about it so much. So, especially while you're sitting, friends, I have treated the earth element as not self. I prefer to say impersonal, with no self based on the earth element, with the destruction fading away, cessation, giving up, relinquishing of attraction, of craving and clinging based on the earth element, of mental standpoints, adherences, and underlying tendencies based on the earth element, I have understood that my mind is liberated. Now, these are the, what he's talking about here is not just intellectual understanding. He's talking about actually seeing and realizing that all of this stuff that we consider ourselves is impersonal. It's just phenomena arising and passing away because of past actions, because of past craving, because of past clinging, and because of past habitual tendencies. When we are talking about the five elements, you have body, feeling, perception, formations, and consciousness. When a feeling arises it is not an emotional feeling. It is a pleasant feeling, a painful feeling, neither painful nor pleasant. When a pleasant feeling arises, the perception arises with it. And the perception is, oh, that's a pleasant feeling. Or it's a painful feeling, depending on what it is. What happens is when we have either a pleasant feeling or a painful feeling arising, our habitual tendency is to try to think the feeling away. Every time you try to control the feeling with your thoughts, that is the cause of suffering. There are times painful feeling arises. Now, there's five kinds of painful feeling. There's painful physical feeling. There's pleasant physical feeling. There's pleasant mental feeling. There's painful mental feeling. There's equanimity. I started with painful and I should have started with pleasant. Somanasa, domanasa, sukha, dukkha, somanasa, domanasa, upekkha. That's how you say it in Pali. Anytime you take any one of these feelings personally, you're trying to control it. Your mind thinks, this is me, this is mine, this is who I am. And that causes a lot of suffering. When you're sitting in meditation and a painful feeling arises, the first thing you'll notice that your mind does is begin to think about it. And the more you think about that feeling, the more you feed that feeling, and it gets stronger and stronger. So the first thing you want to do is let go of your thoughts about the feeling. And you do that by using the six R's. As soon as you allow that feeling to be there and come back to your object of meditation, one of two things will happen. Either that painful feeling or pleasant feeling will go away, or it won't. If it doesn't go away, as you keep six R-ing every time you're pulled to that sensation, then your mind starts to develop equanimity to it. Equanimity is very strong balance in your mind. You know that that feeling is there, but so what? Never mind. Doesn't make your mind shake and jitter. Doesn't make your mind move. Now, there is something that's very interesting. Almost everybody thinks that feeling starts in the body, and it doesn't. Feeling is mental. Perception is mental. Contact is mental. Attention is mental. Okay? So that painful feeling actually starts in mind. Mind is a forerunner of all states. Right? You read that every morning. So, the way to overcome that suffering is by using the six R's. The six R's are incredibly important. You don't repeat what each R is in your mind. You do what it says to do. You recognize when your mind is distracted. You release the distraction, not keeping your attention on it, even if it is a painful feeling. You relax the tightness caused by these mind's movements. That means letting go of craving. Now, I need another. Well, that's okay. This is your brain, or this is what your brain looks like. It's not actually yours. If it was yours, you wouldn't hear me. There's a membrane that goes around the brain, and it actually extends all the way down your spine. It's called the meninges. Every time there's a thought, every time there's a feeling, every time there's a sensation that arises, your brain expands against this little bag that's holding your brain together. And it does it on each inside, on each half of the brain. So, when you recognize tension and tightness in your head, in your mind, this is called nama rupa, in your head, in your mind, you relax that. You relax that slight tightness. It might not go away the first time you try to relax it. It doesn't matter. You just relax one time. After relaxing, then you have to bring up something wholesome. What's wholesome?
Smile.
Smile. This is a smiling meditation. The more you smile all the time, the better your mindfulness becomes. What is mindfulness? Mindfulness is remembering to observe how mind's attention moves from one thing to another. You have your attention here, all of a sudden you're over there thinking this or that. How did that happen? What happened first? What happened after that? What happened after that? What happened after that? So the more you can smile, the easier it is to recognize these things. It improves your mindfulness so much, it's unbelievable. So what do I want you to do? I don't care what you're doing. I don't care if you're going to the toilet. I don't care if you're eating. I don't care if you're getting ready for bed. I don't care if you're taking a shower. Smile. All the time. Smile here in your mind. Why? It makes your mind light and alert. Smile with your eyes. Even when you're sitting, smile with your eyes. You let go of a lot of tension. A little Buddha smile on the lips. And a smile in your heart. Smile. I can tell when you're not smiling, because you'll come in and tell me how hard the practice is. And what do I always say? You're not smiling enough. You come in and complain about, oh, I have all this problem. Well, because you're not smiling enough. Your mindfulness isn't sharp enough. There's one thing that I always rather insist on when I'm giving a retreat. One, you have to smile. You have to laugh with yourself at how crazy your mind can be. When you start taking everything personally, your mind gets stuck in the mud. When you laugh with yourself about how dumb your mind can be, and it's not you, you're not crazy. Your mind is crazy. Why? Because it keeps thinking that it's in control when it's not. When you laugh, it changes your perspective. I don't mean a big outburst laughter. I mean, have a sense of humor about how crazy your mind can be. And kind of chuckle to yourself a little bit. As soon as you do that, you go from, I am that, to, it's only that. You go from taking it personally, these are my thoughts and my feelings and I don't like it, to, well, it's only these thoughts and feelings. It's not mine. I didn't ask it to come up. I'm not in control of it. So let it be. Let it go. After smiling, come back to your object of meditation with that smiling mind. Now, every time you relax that tension and tightness in your head, in your mind, you'll notice right after that, your mind is very clear. Your mind is very bright. Your mind is very agile. There's no thoughts. There's only this pure observation. And your mind is pure. Why is it pure? Because there's no craving in it, because you let it go. Bring that pure mind back to your object of meditation. Stay with your object of meditation as long as you can. At first, the first day of a retreat is by far the hardest part of a retreat. Your mind is sleepy, your mind is restless, doesn't want to settle down, it gives you all kinds of nonsense stuff. Fortunately, that's the hardest part of the retreat. Your mind will start to calm down after a period of time. Use the six R's. Every time your mind gets pulled away from your object of meditation, use the six R's. But do it in a flowing way. Recognize, release, relax, re-smile, return. Keep it going. The more familiar you are with the six R's, which is right effort, by the way, in the Eightfold Path. I just made it, changed it a little bit so that it's easier to remember. Every time you use the six R's, you're letting go of craving. Every time you let go of craving, you are experiencing a kind of nibbana. Mundane nibbana, for sure. But your mind is pure. It doesn't have that craving in it. That means your mind is starting to cool down little bit by little bit. Now, the progress in this meditation will probably surprise you a lot, because your progress is going to be fast. If it isn't fast, It means that you're trying to do a different kind of meditation along with this one. Doesn't work. Let go of every other kind of meditation that you know of or that you've been practicing. Don't pay attention to the breath. Stay with your spiritual friend and yourself. If you've been doing breathing meditation, you probably have the habit of doing it. When you notice that you're watching the breath, don't verbalize about it. 6R, let it be. Let go of your attachment to the breath. It's really odd, because loving-kindness meditation is mentioned many, many times in the suttas, and mindfulness of breath is mentioned 8 times. So what did the Buddha teach more? He taught loving-kindness more. Why? Because your progress in the meditation is so much faster. It's easy to carry the loving-kindness with you when you're walking, when you're sitting, and you can radiate loving-kindness much more easily. And having that light, smiling mind aids in that. So let go of any other meditation that you've done. You want to continue on with that when you get off retreat? Your choice, I don't care. But I want you to learn this meditation as well as you can while you're here. Okay? So seeing everything as part of an impersonal process is very necessary. But we've spent lifetimes, many, many lifetimes, thinking that our mind was in control of everything. And it's not. The only way to be in control of everything is to let go of the desire to control. Let go of your habitual tendency. Let go of your habitual emotional tendency. See it all as part of a process. Now, I gave you the definition of mindfulness, which is a lot different. When I spent 12 years in Asia, and I spent 12 years of going around to a lot of different monks that were very famous and learning their meditation. I asked questions that nobody asked. They wouldn't think of asking. I've been a Buddhist since I was this tall. I wouldn't ask a big teacher, what is mindfulness? Oh, mindfulness means being mindful. Well, what in the world is that supposed to mean? You can't use the word you're trying to define in the definition. Doesn't work. So I gave you what I discovered was a good definition for mindfulness: remembering to observe how mind's attention moves from one thing to another. How does this process work? As you go and get into the meditation, we're going to go through a lot of different suttas that will show you how this process works. It's always an impersonal process. things arise because conditions are right for it to arise. Whether those conditions came from lifetimes of thinking and acting in one particular way or not, doesn't matter. What matters is you're seeing how this works right now. I had 20 years of practice of straight vipassana. From the very first day I was told to be mindful. Everybody thinks you're supposed to understand what that means. There's a magazine out right now that's called Mindfulness. And you should see the definitions. There must be 40 or 50 different, maybe even 100, definitions. Because, oh, I'm a psychologist, I'm a psychiatrist, mindfulness means this. Oh, I'm a healer, I'm a doctor, mindfulness means that. Well, this is just about this meditation. When you start seeing how this process works, you start seeing it as being an impersonal process, and you start recognizing how everything arises, you will eventually see that everything is just part of a process. It's just part of an idea. A preconceived idea. It's an opinion. This is how argument starts, because opinions on one thing or another lead to fighting. I'm right and you're wrong. But when you let go of the personal nature of everything that arises and see it as it actually is, you will see much, much more clearly how this process works. One of the things that's real important for you to realize is that hindrances, when they take your attention away from your object of meditation, are not the enemy. Don't fight with the hindrance. The hindrance is showing you where your attachment is. Why do hindrances arise? Because in the past you broke one of the precepts. And you had a guilty mind, and you identified with it. Now when a hindrance arises, and you use the six R's, you're letting go of that identification with those past actions. So, every day you're going to repeat the precepts. This is to get them set in your mind. It's not a rite and ritual. Do it understanding that we've all broken all the precepts. We've all killed. We've all stolen. We've all had wrong sexual activity. We've all lied and cursed and gossiped and tried to divide people, and we've all had alcohol or drugs at some point. Maybe not in this lifetime, but because that hindrance arose, it's because we broke one of the hindrances in the past. What you do with what arises in the present moment dictates what happens in the future. If you fight with the present moment, if you try to change the present moment, if you try to make the present be the way you want it to be, that is the cause of suffering. But when you use the six R's, you're letting go of that suffering. It doesn't matter how many times a hindrance arises. If you get into restlessness or sloth and torpor, you six R it, you come back to your object of meditation, you might be there for a second or less, and your mind goes back to it. That's okay. The hindrances are your teachers. I'm not your teacher. I'm a guide. I'll see you every day. I'll make sure you're staying on the path. But you're teaching yourself. You start to realize how you cause your own suffering. And you start going, God, my mind is crazy. I keep doing the same thing over and over again and hating it just as much as I did the first time it happened. But you'll start to recognize that and you'll use the six R's. The six R's will take you all the way to arahatship. So you're going to be real familiar with how to do it. And actually, sometimes it'll even become automatic. It's like a hindrance starts to come up and your mind recognizes it and it releases, relaxes, smiles, and comes back to your object of meditation and you didn't do anything. It did it all on its own. That is a good thing. We're letting go of unwholesome things and developing wholesome things. We're letting go of old past habits that always caused us pain and developing the good habit, which has relief in it. Change is a frightening thing to your mind, especially changing from the idea of I am that to, well, it's only this stuff. Mind doesn't like that idea. It's going to throw all kinds of temper tantrums at you. Fine. It doesn't matter how many times your mind gets distracted. What matters is what you do with that distraction. What you do in the present dictates what happens in the future. If you fight the present, you can look to the future having that happen again. And again, and again. And it will be really persistent until you finally learn, oh, maybe I won't handle it that way this time. Maybe I won't take this so personally and let it go. And what happens? Relief. You have all kinds of insights that arise because of that. So, invite the hindrances in. Don't push them away. Let them be there by themselves. Don't keep your attention on them. Relax into it. Smile. Have some fun with it. Fun. Have you heard of anybody that gave a retreat that told you you're supposed to have fun with the meditation? Have you? I want you to smile. I want you to laugh. I want you to have fun. Because when you start taking fun interest in how this stuff works, you learn much more quickly. You'll recognize these things much easier. You keep your mind light. One of the biggest tasks I have is getting people to lighten up. Don't try so hard. Back away from that. And after, you might hear it 100 or 150 times, you'll actually do it. And then you'll come to me with this amazed look on your face and you say, you know, I backed off on that and it really worked. Well, yeah. I do understand. I have been meditating for over 40 years. Oh, it's really getting frightening. It's 42 now. I understand all these games that minds can play. Don't take it seriously. The more fun you have with a hindrance, the faster that hindrance will go away. When you were in school, you were learning something. You had a class that you really liked. What kind of grade did you get in that class? We got a good grade. Why? Because it was fun. Same thing. Have fun with this stuff. I had 20 years of sitting with, I've done a lot of retreats. And every one of those retreats, there was somebody sitting and they were trying really hard. Before me, isn't that true?
Yes.
And when they got off retreat, you know what everybody talked about? How relieved they were, how much pain they went through, how hard it was. When you get off this retreat, you're going to go, I wish it lasted a little longer. This stuff is fun. And you talk about how much fun you had with it and how easy it actually is to do. We like to make things complicated. We like it. And every time we make things complicated, our mind gets really full of hindrances because it doesn't work very well. I have friends that have been practicing longer than I have, doing the same practice over and over again. And they still have the same kind of hindrances after 50 years of arising. Oh, I still have fear or anxiety, but I can recognize it. So I don't take it quite so personally. There's a lot of people that have done a lot of meditation and they get to a certain spot, hit a wall. Can't go any further. I was at one talk when somebody talked to the person giving the talk. They were talking about mindfulness meditation, vipassana. And they said, how long do I have to sit with this suffering? You know what the answer is? Grin and bear it. It's going to last a long time. Now that does not agree with what the suttas say about the Dhamma. The Dhamma is immediately effective when it's done correctly. You have a hindrance arise, you recognize it. You don't keep your attention on it, you release it. Then you put your attention on relaxing. Then you put your attention on smiling. Then you put your attention on bringing that smiling mind back to your object of meditation. When you let go of the hindrance and don't keep your attention on it, and then relax. You have let it go. You have let go of the craving. That is immediately effective. You will be immediately effective a lot if you use the 6 R's a lot. And you'll feel a difference. You'll feel that you're starting to progress. You might say, well, what's happening? Well, I'm keeping a watch. If you're not doing it right, I'll let you know. If you're doing it right, I'll let you know. Maybe. But I'll definitely let you know if you're not doing it right. And I'll give you a solution. I've been teaching this stuff for a long time. I have students all over the world. And one of the things that people in the East really don't like, so I go into Thailand or I go into Burma, I say, you know, our minds work exactly the same way. Oh no, I don't like that. I'm something special. I'm Thai. I'm Burmese. But your mind works in the same way. Every human being's mind works in exactly the same way. So it doesn't matter if you're Korean or Japanese or Russian or Chinese, your mind works in exactly the same way. And when you apply your mindfulness in the correct way, you'll see that your mind is the same as everybody else's. And you'll get more of a sense of that as the retreat goes on. Okay. We were at the earth element. Then they go to the water element, the fire element, the air element, and the space element. Then the consciousness element. All of these things are impersonal. They're not you, they're not yours. With no self based on any of these elements, and with the destruction, fading away, cessation, giving up, relinquishing of attraction. Also, when this says relinquishing of attraction, that also means relinquishing of repulsion. Giving up the craving and clinging based on all of these different elements. Giving up all of the mental standpoints. That's the way it is because I've seen it. But there's that little bit of pride in there that says, I'm here. I'm controlling things. To the underlying tendency based on all of these elements, I have understood that my mind is liberated. It is by knowing thus, seeing thus, regarding these 6 elements, that through not craving and clinging, my mind is liberated from the taints. Saying good, one might delight and rejoice in that monk's words. Having done so, a further question may be put thus. But friend, there are these 6 internal and external bases, rightly proclaimed by the Blessed One who knows and sees them fully accomplished and fully awakened. What six? They are the eye and forms, the ear and sounds, the nose and odors, the tongue and flavors, the body and tangibles, the mind and mind objects. These, friend, are the six internal and external bases, rightly proclaimed by the Blessed One who knows and sees, accomplished and fully awakened. How does the Venerable One know? How does he see regarding these six internal and external bases? So that through not craving and clinging, my mind is liberated from the taints. Monks, when a monk is one with taints destroyed and is completely liberated through final knowledge, this is the natural way for him to answer. Friend, with the destruction fading away, cessation, giving up, relinquishing of lust, craving, delight, attraction, and clinging, and of mental standpoints. Mental standpoints means mental proliferation, and you'll get that soon. Adherences and underlying tendencies regarding the I, forms, I consciousness, and things cognizable by mind. Through I consciousness, I have understood that my mind is liberated. With the destruction fading away, cessation, giving up, relinquishing of desire, lust, delight, craving, attraction, and clinging, and of mental standpoints, adherences, and underlying tendencies regarding the ear, sounds, ear consciousness, and things cognizable by mind through ear consciousness. And this goes through the nose, odors, nose consciousness, through the tongue, flavor, and tongue consciousness, through body, tangibles, and body consciousness, through mind, mind objects, and mind consciousness, and things cognizable by mind through mind consciousness. I have understood that my mind is liberated. It is by knowing this, or seeing this, regarding these six internal and external bases, that through not craving and clinging, my mind is liberated from the taints. But friend, how does a Venerable One know? How does he see in regard to this body with its consciousness and all external signs, eye-making, mind-making, and the underlying tendency to conceit have been eradicated by him? Friend, when a monk is one with taints destroyed and completely liberated through final knowledge, this is the natural way for him to understand. Friends, formerly, when I lived the home life, I was ignorant. Then the Tathagata or his disciple taught me the Dhamma. On hearing the Dhamma, I acquired faith in the Tathagata. Possessing that faith, I considered thus, household life is crowded and dusty. Life gone forth is wide open. It's not easy while living in a home to lead a holy life, utterly perfect and pure as a polished shell. Suppose I shave off my hair and beard and put on the yellow robe and go forth from a home life into homelessness. On a later occasion, abandoning a small fortune, abandoning a small or large circle of relations, I shaved off my hair and beard, put on the yellow robe, and went forth from the home life into homelessness. having thus gone forth and possessing the monk's training and way of life, abandoning the killing of living beings. He abstained from killing living beings with rod and weapon laid aside. Conscientious, merciful, he abides compassionate to all living beings. Abandoning the taking of what is not given, he abstains from taking what is not given, taking only what is given, expecting only what is given. Not stealing. By not stealing, he abides in purity. Abandoning in celibacy, he observes celibacy. Living apart, abstaining from the vulgar practice of sexual intercourse. This is for monks. Remember that. It's for you right now with your 8 precepts. Abandoning false speech, he abstains from false speech. He speaks truth, adheres to truth, is trustworthy and reliable, one who is no deceiver of the world. Abandoning malicious speech, he abstains from malicious speech. He does not repeat elsewhere what he has heard here in order to divide those people from these. Nor does he repeat to these people what he's heard elsewhere in order to divide these people from those. Thus he is one who reunites those who are divided, a promoter of friendship, who enjoys concord, rejoices in concord, delights in concord, a speaker of words that promote concord. Abandoning harsh speech, this means cursing. He abstains from harsh speech. He speaks such words as are gentle, pleasing to the ear, and lovable, as go to the heart, are courteous, desired by many and agreeable to many. Abandoning gossip, he abstains from gossip. He speaks at the right time. He speaks what is fact, speaks on what is good, speaks on the Dhamma and discipline. At the right time, speaks such words as are worth recording, reasonable, moderate, and beneficial. He abstains from injuring seeds and plants. He practices eating one meal a day, abstaining from eating at night and outside the proper time. He abstains from dancing, singing, music, and shows. He abstains from wearing garlands, smartening himself with scent, embellishing himself with unguents. He abstains from high and large couches. This means high beds that have too much softness to them. Every time you go to a motel these days, they have a bed that is way too soft. I wind up sleeping on the floor quite often. He abstains from accepting gold and silver. He abstains from accepting raw grain. He abstains from accepting raw meat. Why? Because a monk doesn't have time to take care of those kind of things and cook them. He abstains from accepting women and girls. He abstains from accepting men and women slaves. He abstains from accepting goats and sheep. He abstains from accepting fowl and pigs. He abstains from accepting elephants, cattle, horses, and mares. He abstains from accepting fields and land. He abstains from going on errands and running messages. He abstains from buying and selling. He abstains from false weights, false metals, and false measures. He abstains from accepting bribes, deceiving, defrauding, and trickery. He abstains from wounding, murdering, binding, brigandage, plunder, and violence. He becomes content with robes to protect his body and with alms food to protect his, to maintain his stomach. Wherever he goes, he sets out taking only these with him. Just as a bird, wherever it goes, flies with its wings as its only burden, so too the monk becomes content with robes to protect his body and with alms food to maintain his stomach. And wherever he goes, he sets out taking only these with him. Possessing this aggregate of noble virtue, he experiences within himself a bliss that is blameless. On seeing a form with the eye, he does not grasp at its signs and features, since if he left the eye faculty unguarded, evil unwholesome states of covetousness and grief might invade him. He practices the way of its restraint. He guards the eye faculty, undertakes the restraint of the eye faculty. How do you undertake the restraint of the eye faculty?
Staying with your object
of meditation. But that's only a partial answer. When you see something, if your mind grasps at its signs and features, you'll start thinking about what you're seeing. And before long, your mind is 1,000 miles away thinking about this or that. So, what you need to do is 6R. And if you're seeing something, just look at it. If your mind starts to think about it, 6R that, let it go and look. Most of the time, we see things very nice, beautiful flowers. And then we start thinking about those beautiful flowers. We're not seeing the flower anymore, we're thinking. Most people don't even recognize they have a body because there's so much into their head, so much into their thoughts, into the different sense doors, whatever they happen to be. What we want to do is use the 6Rs and come back. If you're looking at a beautiful flower, just look at it. When you're done, then go on your merry way. If you spend time thinking about it, when you leave that flower, you still are thinking. So you're not restraining that eye faculty in the proper way, which is always mind faculty. On hearing a sound with the ear, on smelling an odor with the nose, on tasting a flavor with the tongue, on touching a tangible with the body, on cognizing a mind object with mind, he does not grasp at its signs and features. These things can arise, it's fine. Watch mind. 6R. Come back to smiling. You smiling as your object of meditation when you're doing daily activities. Since if you left the mind faculty unguarded, evil, unwholesome states of I like it, I want it, or I don't like it, I don't want it, come into mind. He practices the way of its restraint. He guards the mind faculty, undertakes the restraint of the mind faculty by using the 6Rs.
Possessing this noble virtue of the faculties, he experiences within himself a bliss that is unsullied. He becomes one who acts in full awareness when going forward and returning, who acts in full awareness when looking ahead and looking away, who acts in full awareness when flexing and extending his limbs, who acts in full awareness when wearing his robes and carrying his outer robe and bowl, who acts in full awareness when eating, drinking, consuming food, and tasting, who acts in full awareness when defecating and urinating, who acts in full awareness when walking, standing, sitting, falling asleep, waking up, talking, and keeping silent. Full awareness of what? What mind is doing when you're doing these activities. Possessing this aggregate of noble virtue, this noble restraint of the faculties, possessing this noble mindfulness and full awareness, he resorts to a secluded resting place, the forest, the root of a tree, a mountain, a ravine, a hillside cave, a charnel ground, a jungle thicket, an open space, a heap of straw. On returning from his alms round after his meal, he sits down, setting his body erect, and establishes mindfulness before him, abandoning covetousness for the world, greed. He abides with a mind free from greed. He purifies his mind from greed. Abandoning ill will and hatred, he abides with a mind free from ill will, compassionate for the welfare of all living beings. He purifies his mind from ill will and hatred. Abandoning sloth and torpor, he is free from sloth and torpor, mindful and fully aware, purifies his mind of sloth and torpor. Abandoning restlessness and anxiety, he abides unagitated with a mind inwardly peaceful. He purifies his mind from restlessness and anxiety. Abandoning doubt, he abides having gone beyond doubt, unperplexed about wholesome states. He purifies his mind from doubt. Having thus abandoned these five hindrances, imperfections of mind that weaken wisdom, quite secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unwholesome states, I entered upon and abided in the first jhana, which is accompanied by thinking and examining thought, with joy and happiness born of seclusion. With the stilling of thinking and examining thought, I entered upon and abided in the second jhana. With the fading away of joy, I entered upon and abided in the third jhana. With the abandoning of pleasure and pain, I entered upon and abided in the fourth jhana, which has neither pain nor pleasure and purity of mindfulness, due to equanimity. When my collected mind was thus purified, bright, unblemished, rid of imperfections, malleable, wieldy, steady, and attained to imperturbability, I directed it to the knowledge of the destructions of the taints. I directly knew, as it actually is, this is suffering. We'll get more into the noble truths as we go along, too. This is the origin of suffering. This is the cessation of suffering. This is the way leading to the cessation of suffering. I directly knew, as it actually is, these are the taints. This is the origin of the taints. This is the cessation of the taints. This is a way leading to the cessation of the taints. When I knew and saw thus, my mind was liberated from the taint of sensual desire, the taint of being, and from the taint of ignorance. When it was liberated, there came the knowledge, it is liberated. I directly knew birth is destroyed. The holy life has been lived. What had to be done has been done. There is no more coming to any state of being. It is by knowing thus, seeing thus, friends, that in regard to this body with its consciousness and all external signs, I-making, mind-making, and the underlying tendency to conceit have been eradicated in me. Saying, good monks, one may delight and rejoice in the monk's words. Having done so, one should say to him, it is a gain for us, friend. It is a great gain for us, friend, that we see such a companion in the holy life as the Venerable One. That's what the Blessed One said. The monks were satisfied and delighted in the Blessed One's words. So this particular sutta is fairly deep. But it lets you know what kind of things that you have to watch out for, and how to use the six R's in the proper way. May suffering ones be suffering free, and the fear-struck fearless be. May the grieving shed all grief, and may all beings find relief. May all beings share this merit that we've thus acquired for the acquisition of all kinds of happiness. May beings inhabiting space and earth, devas and nagas of mighty power, share this merit of ours. May they long protect the Buddha's dispensation. Sadhu.